introducing Elvis music. That's what we do. You know, we're starting to really worry. We got about 10 minutes before the show, and Scott's still not there. One of my backup vocalists said, hey, there's been some news about the finding of a body. You know, we're all thinking, well, it can't be Scott. It's not Scott.
It broke my heart that he laid up there in the cold. To think of that, it hurts. Who would murder Scott?
Somebody in a rage.
Yeah. An immediate, we want to kill you. We want you dead.
The day that he went missing, he had contacted a person, Heather Frank, via Facebook.
Heather, for us, was just a mystery woman.
Did you think it remotely possible that Heather could have committed murder?
No, not even for a second.
She was fearing for her own life.
What she must have lived through. She had no idea.
It was like I got hit by a wrecking ball.
I said, please tell me she's still alive.
Greeley Radio, 104.7 The Pirate.
But I know that there's a rider.
It was a glorious winter Monday in Greeley, Colorado. A clean, thick quilt of new-fallen snow was gleaming in the sun. And morning man George Gray of 104.7 FM was in a fine mood indeed.
Good morning. It is going to be a beautiful day here in northern Colorado. And of course, you're listening to Pirate.
George had been waking Greeley up for more than 20 years by the time February 10th, 2020 came along. No preparing for that day. Happy talk would not suffice after that Monday morning.
Do you remember what you did that morning?
Yeah. Yep. I try not to live it. Sometimes you don't want to think things are real.
For many in the Greeley area, mornings revolve around breakfast at Doug's Diner. On that Monday, bacon and eggs perfumed the air. But a young woman named Shelby Cabong hardly noticed. She worried about her friend and fellow waitress, the usually coiffed and manicured Heather Frank.
That was the first time I think I'd ever seen her without makeup or with her hair all done up. She didn't seem herself that day at all.
2 hours north and thousands of feet up Poudre Canyon, a county snowplow driver had already been up for hours that day, busy clearing some remote roads in the Rocky Mountain National Park. He saw some smoke off-road, up a small hill, so he decided to pull over to see what it was. Of course, it was much later, when Bill Mean took us up there, to show us where he found what he found.
As I was coming up this way, I could see that this log was burning. And I wondered, why is the log on fire? As I took a few more steps, I could see what looked like branches. And then I realized the branches had shoes on them or boots. And at that point, I knew that this was a crime scene. So I backtracked and ran to my truck.
I have a dead body.
Okay, and do you believe he's beyond any help?
Yeah, he's definitely passed away.
I said, oh my God, probably 100 times while I was waiting.
Waited way up there in that remote place through 45 minutes that seemed an eternity. And then the first responders were there, and they moved the log and found a male body, his legs, torso, arms, badly burned. No ID to say who it was. None.
I've never seen a body as damaged and hurt and destroyed.
This was murder. No question, said investigator Justin Atwood of the Larimer County Sheriff's Office. And the fire was clearly meant to destroy all evidence of it.
Had he been wrapped up in anything, or had they made an effort to conceal a body?
They had wrapped him in a light blue blanket and plastic, and then use duct tape to secure the plastic and the blanket around his body.
And if Bill Mean, the snowplow guy, hadn't been up there, the charred remains might never have been found, let alone a cause of death. Instead, Investigators could clearly see the victim's neck had been slashed deep, almost clear through.
Somebody in a rage had taken a knife to him.
Yeah, my initial thoughts was that this was not a fight. This was an immediate, we want to kill you. We want you dead.
But who was the victim? And who killed him? Why? No idea. Not a clue. Later the same Monday, back in a town near Greeley, an eager crowd was about to enjoy a concert. Elvis was in the house. Or at least an impersonator was. And he's someone you've already met. George Gray. Morning DJ, nighttime Elvis.
I tell people I'm not Elvis. I'm just here to keep the music and spirit alive.
Which he did, does, with the help of his 11-piece backup band.
We're all supposed to meet there at a certain time for a sound check.
Mm-hmm.
So when it got to where it's about 30 minutes before showtime, everybody's there except for Scott.
Scott. That would be Scott Sessions, the band's ace trumpet player.
And then it got to about 15 minutes till, and now everybody's trying to call him, trying to text him, and he's not responding.
Which was extra weird because Scott was entirely dependable. Always on time, always smiling, his infectious smile. And at 53, he had earned a reputation as one of the best trumpeters around. Here he was in a concert the year before.
He was, I think last year, voted Northern Colorado's best trumpet player. How'd you do this year?
Washed out this year. Actually, they didn't hold it this year, George.
But. Very good. Mr. Scott Sessions right here, ladies and gentlemen.
But that Monday, no choice. They went on without Scott. Still, George Gray couldn't help but be distracted.
Thinking in the back of my mind, you know, wondering what's going on with Scott.
Two mysteries now, equal and opposing, and strange events to come. A crucial new clue, Scott's car. But he's not the one driving.
Did you see who brought that car there?
Yeah, someone actually got out of the car, and we could see from the video that it looked like a statue of a man.
So where was Scott?
It broke my heart that they did what they did. So to think of that, it hurts.
On Tuesday morning, George Gray was a worried man. Now, he woke up Greeley just like he always did. But the unexplained absence of ace trumpeter Scott Sessions was all he could think about. So right after his radio show, George called Scott's dad.
I said, "Hey, Stan, Scott didn't show up for the gig last night." He goes, "Well, that's unusual. He loves that band." And I said, "I think I'm going to run over to his house and make sure he's okay."
I was becoming a little worried. Wasn't like him.
So Stanley Sessions drove over to his son's house, where he met George, and used a key he had to get inside.
So Stan walks through the living room to the back bedroom, and I hear him say, hey, buddy. And my heart sunk. He's actually talking to the cat.
Oh, my Lord.
So Stan comes back, he goes, "He's not here, I don't think he made it home."
So I said, "Well, George, I'm going over to the police department and I'm gonna report that he's missing."
Stan told the police his son performed in multiple bands and painted houses on the side. He last heard from him on Saturday night, 3 days earlier, when Scott called from his car.
"Dad, I'm on my way to Fort Collins to visit with some friends." Then he said, "Oh, there's the address." He said, "I'm here now." I said, "I'll see you in the morning."
But Stan said he had no idea who his son went to visit. And so that was that. All he could do then was go home and wait and try to keep the awful thoughts at bay. He tried instead to think about good things. Stan and his wife
tried for many years to have a child, and finally they adopted Scott. But they weren't totally ready for his last-minute arrival.
We were nervous because now we had a little person we had to take care of, and we didn't have anything. So we used a laundry basket for a while until we got some baby stuff for him.
Soon, another son made it a family of four. And when Scott turned 25, he tracked down his biological mother. And that's when he discovered he had a sister.
I got a call from Scott, and he said, "Hey, sis, I guess I'm your brother." and we just automatically clicked.
Allison Weldon lives in Kansas, but distance didn't seem to matter. The bond was pretty much instant.
We're in tune with each other. We like the same things. We acted the same way, even down to our cat.
And she quickly learned what his world revolved around.
His trumpet was his life.
How do you describe passion? He says, "Dad, the only time I'm really, really happy is when I'm on that stage playing my trumpet."
He loved music. He loved people. He loved his family.
Now his family was desperately worried. A few hours after he reported his son missing, Scott's dad got a call to come back to the police station. Inside was investigator Justin Atwood, waiting to tell Stanley about a body they identified by fingerprints. The body of his son.
He said, "Stan, we found your son." They believed that he had been murdered.
I thought, who would murder Scott? Who would murder him? Everybody loves Scott.
Except, obviously, not everybody. At least one person, maybe more, wanted him dead. And now his family had to listen to the gruesome details.
It broke my heart that he laid up there in the cold. And to burn him afterwards, you know, like it wasn't good enough that they did what they did. So, to think of that, it hurts. But I know that he's not hurting anymore.
Who would do such a thing? Investigator Atwood assessed what was known.
We didn't have a lot of information at that point about who had done this to him. We just had Scott's cell phone information.
Which was not nothing. Because the cell phone data told a story of sorts, just not one that made a whole lot of sense. On the Saturday before the missed Monday concert, as they could clearly see, Scott's phone did not go to Fort Collins, where he told his dad he was going. Instead, the phone, and presumably Scott, spent the entire night in Greeley, somewhere near this King Soopers grocery store. Armed with that information, police swarmed the area. And?
We ended up locating his vehicle parked in the parking lot of the King Soopers. And so when we found his vehicle in that area, one of the things that we wanted to do is start immediately pulling video security footage from the area businesses that were around there.
And, well, it was winter and the quality wasn't too good. But they scanned it all, hours and hours of video, until they saw this. The curious thing that happened Tuesday morning, 6:48 a.m. This was the day after Scott's body was found. And here was somebody driving his car into the King Soopers parking lot.
Did you see who brought that car there?
Yeah, someone actually got out of the car, and then the person walked south away from the vehicle.
Not walking to another car, just walking away.
Just walking away. And we could see from the video that it looked like a statue of a man. It was not a woman.
But that's about the best you could tell? Just a
that's
guy?
That's the best you could do. It was very grainy.
Who was that man? Maybe Scott's ex-girlfriend would have some answers for the police. Maybe.
I called in sick for 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. I can't tell you why.
Thank you. It goes without saying, of course, in Greeley, Colorado, or anywhere else, nobody is perfect. Not a single one of us. And not Scott Sessions. Probe those imperfections, figured the investigators, and they just might find a clue or two. They pulled the file and found trouble. 2 years earlier, they discovered Scott's temper had gotten the better of him, and a then-girlfriend was given an order of protection. Her name? Loretta Bolick.
We knew that she had a very up-and-down relationship with Scott Sessions. At one point, they had got into an argument at her apartment.
Loretta said Scott threw a coffee cup toward her. She asked him to leave, and he did.
He ended up getting arrested for a domestic violence charge involving Loretta Bolick.
Was she injured?
No, she was not.
Still, that was certainly worth following up, especially when they looked up Loretta's address. It was right near the King Super Shopping Center, where Scott's car was found, and his phone last pinged that Saturday night.
Loretta's house was approximately 200 to 300 feet north of where that tower was.
What did you think when you saw that?
I was extremely concerned. I started thinking that Loretta was involved in this.
Well, I appreciate you coming down and with us.
Of course.
So they asked her to come in.
How long did you guys date for?
Well, we dated consistently until he got arrested on July 15th, 2018.
Now, this was the odd thing. Even though they broke up then and there, they remained friends. Good friends. In fact, she had a voicemail from that Friday night, less than 24 hours before Scott vanished.
Hey, how's it going? Call you back as soon as I can. So, anyway, so hope you're having a great day.
So you didn't talk to him at all on Saturday, and then on Sunday, did you hear anything from anybody? So you didn't hear anything until Monday?
Till Wednesday.
Oh, till Wednesday.
Till Wednesday.
Why didn't she learn about Scott's death until that Wednesday? Because, she said, she was offline.
I called in sick for 2 days, Tuesday and Wednesday. I can't tell you why, but I was emotional. I couldn't get out of bed. And I had no idea why.
What to make of Loretta? No. Never returning Scott's call, being out from work for no specific reason, it seemed a little suspicious. But at the same time, as she answered their questions, they could see she was genuinely upset.
Okay, there's a lot of people looking to try and figure this out, okay?
Loved him very much, even though it was a f***ed up relationship. I loved him so much.
And then, as they sat there talking, Investigator Atwood's phone pinged. Urgent message. Important. New information. So he quickly ended the interview.
All right, well, let's get out of here.
What happened? The sheriff's office got a search warrant for Scott's home, and inside, they found a list of his passwords. He'd written them all down, left the paper on a countertop. So that let them log into his Facebook account, where they found some very private messages. Not to ex-girlfriend Loretta. Her, they realized, they could clear. No, this was someone new.
And we were able to see that Scott had a conversation with a young woman identified as Heather Frank.
Heather Frank, a mom of three adult sons, who was a waitress over at Doug's Diner. Investigators could see that Heather and Scott had been sending messages to each other that Saturday night. So then they looked up Heather's address. And what do you know?
She had also lived right near where the King Supers was.
It sounds like maybe you want to go and talk to that woman, Heather Frank.
There was a lot more work that we needed to do before we had that conversation.
As in, good research makes for a good interview. Who was Heather Frank? Besides a warm and bubbly waitress who seemed quite beside herself after that strange last weekend of Scott Sessions' life.
She just looked beautiful all the time, and she was just as beautiful inside as she was outside.
Heather and Scott, a new romance?
It looked as if it was a budding relationship.
But someone else was about to enter the picture and turn it very, very dark. Remember the classic TV series Cheers? The bar was a gathering place where everybody knows your name. Doug's Diner was like that.
Would this be like the iconic diner of the movies and the kind of Americana?
It kind of is. Half of our customers, we know their orders, we know their drinks. Yeah.
Shelby Cabong is a waitress at Doug's, and she was at work the day police stopped by to ask about her co-worker, Heather Frank. Well, that was easy, said Shelby. Heather was her mentor, her friend, and she was friendly and sweet and kind and a very good person.
She just looked beautiful all the time, and she was just as beautiful inside as she was outside.
Shelby also knew Heather had recently broken up with a long-term boyfriend.
Did she branch out, start seeing other people, or...
She started going out to concerts in Greeley. She had met somebody, and it was kind of exciting to hear that.
Yeah.
It definitely was, that she was moving on.
That somebody, though Shelby didn't know it, was Scott Sessions. Heather had gone to one of his concerts. They got to talking, and then dating, a couple of times. It was Scott's own social media traffic that picked up the story from there.
It looked as if it was a budding relationship. Until it got to a point on February 8th.
February 8th was that Saturday, last day anyone heard from Scott. And here was the chain of messages. At 5:13 p.m., a message from Heather to Scott. Want to come over? Then Scott to Heather. Sure, I just need to hop in the shower. Sound groovy? Heather to Scott. Hurry. There's a pause while Scott showers. Then this, Scott to Heather. I'm on my way over, three smiley faces, warning I smell pretty amazing. And finally at 7:59 p.m., this last message from Heather's phone. Hey, where you at? Investigator Atwood compared those messages with ones Heather and Scott had previously sent and noticed a difference.
It was very cold. It was very dry. It was not a man and woman that had been engaged in the throes of romance with each other.
Early the next morning, Sunday, 3:21 a.m., Heather texted her boss, said she was ill, wouldn't make her shift.
I think she had said she had the flu, and so we didn't think much of it.
And then Monday, the day Scott's body was found up in the mountains, a very un-Heather-like Heather showed up at the diner. On time, but...
She wasn't as quirky that day as she usually is. There was no joking, and I don't remember her talking much that day either.
Something was wrong. Something was off.
Did
you talk to her or ask her about that?
No, because she had said she had the flu.
Maybe. Maybe not. Investigator Atwood drove over to Heather's place and parked where he could keep an eye on things. He got more than he bargained for.
I remember very vividly, we pulled into the cul-de-sac where Heather Frank's apartment is, and I immediately looked at a Subaru crossover station wagon type vehicle, and it had red dirt caked on the sides of it.
Why did the red dirt matter? Well, it looked a lot like the dirt they'd seen on the mountain roads up near Scott's body.
Anything else about that car? Seem unusual?
There was some damage to the front of the vehicle.
So they called in the plate number. And the car, they were told, belonged to a guy named Kevin Eastman. And who was he? Heather Frank's ex-boyfriend, who'd worked in Colorado's oil fields for years. So 5 days after Scott's body was found, police got hold of the cell data for both Heather and Kevin Eastman's phones.
And we were able to see that Heather Frank's cell phone, Kevin Eastman's cell phone, and Scott Sessions' cell phone were all within very close proximity of each other for about 12 hours.
To begin with, in or near Heather's place that Saturday night, when Scott went to see her.
And then very early in the morning, on Sunday morning, after Scott had disappeared, we saw Kevin Eastman's cell phone and Heather Frank's cell phone traveling along roadways in Greeley.
The signals traveled for nearly 2 hours before losing reception as the phones approached Poudre Canyon, where Scott's body was found. Investigators fanned out along the same route, and that's when they found surveillance footage from a local business. Early Sunday morning, a Subaru crossover station wagon traveled the very same route as Kevin and Heather's cell phones toward Poudre Canyon. Then they noticed something else.
And we saw the damage to the front bumper, the same damage that was on the vehicle at Heather's apartment.
Could you see who was in the car?
No.
But 3 hours later, there was the very same car going back the other way. They couldn't make out the plates, but they were convinced that was Kevin Eastman's car.
So they both have to be involved in this somehow.
Based on the cell phone data records, yes, we were starting to believe that both Heather Frank and Kevin Eastman were responsible for Scott's murder.
So the sheriff's office decided to put Heather and Kevin under hidden video surveillance. Would they have done that had they known that it wasn't over? It certainly, certainly wasn't. In those first few days after Scott Sessions was killed, his father, Stan, carried an extra burden of grief. Stan's wife of 58 years, Scott's mom, was in a nursing home. And now, with a heavy heart, he sat with her and gave her the news.
I told her what had happened. And she just looked, kind of gazed into space, and she said, "Who would want to murder my son? Who would want to kill my son?"
Police suspected they knew the answer. Heather Frank and her ex-boyfriend, Kevin Eastman. He, they discovered, had a rap sheet, including assault, weapon possession, and driving while impaired. Investigators, though, felt they needed more evidence before they called them in for interviews. So they installed hidden cameras across the street from Heather's house and secretly placed GPS trackers on their cars, his and hers.
Could you have put somebody outside her place or a rotating batch of detectives?
We could have. The problem with that is that we were using all of our detectives to work the case.
Late the next day, Lieutenant Donnie Robbins was watching a live stream from that hidden camera. And there they were, Kevin Eastman and Heather.
We had seen them leave her residence, get in his vehicle, and travel to a farm in Weld County.
Did you know who the farm belonged to or what might have been there?
Not immediately, and we didn't know what the connection was.
Using the GPS coordinates from the hidden car tracker, Lieutenant Robbins drove out to that farm, about 45 minutes into the country.
When I drove by, it was dark enough. All I could see is a lot zone in a house and an exterior garage, but I couldn't see Eastman's car, couldn't see anything. It was too dark.
No Kevin, no Heather either. Discouraged and tired, he went home. The investigators had been full tilt for 5 days. They were all exhausted. And so, while GPS kept track of the suspect's cars, the investigators went home to bed. All of them.
We're going to go get some sleep. We're going to go take showers. We're going to go visit with our families, see our kids.
The next morning, officers could see troubling movement on that GPS. Overnight, Kevin Eastman's car had left the farm, cruised around the countryside, stopping here and there along the way.
There was key points that happened at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, and that's very unusual behavior. And the first thing that I thought was, we're losing evidence in our homicide that he is out dumping the knife. He's out getting rid of evidence that is going to help us prove this homicide.
That got to be a sinking feeling.
Leaves a very bad taste in your mouth.
The knife. The one presumably used to kill Scott. So Lieutenant Robbins hopped in his unmarked police car and headed back toward the farm. where the GPS indicated Eastman's car had returned.
And as I was driving out there, I saw a column of smoke coming from the property. And I observed Kevin Eastman standing out by what I would call refer to as a burn pile.
He could see Eastman was tending to a fire at a large outdoor burn pit. Hadn't Scott Sessions' body been found burning? So what was Eastman burning now? It was impossible to see. Then a problem. Kevin Eastman's car was on the move again.
My initial thought was crap. And I'll be honest with you, because I'm the only one out here and I'm going to have to try to follow him by myself.
Which he did, to a gas station.
He pulls into the gas pumps and exits his vehicle, and he's got a gas can that he's trying to pump gas into.
When you saw him filling up a gas can, what did you think?
My immediate thought was he was getting more gas to go back and destroy whatever remaining evidence there was at that burn pile.
Decision time. There was no time to consult his bosses. So Lieutenant Robbins walked up to Kevin Eastman and arrested him.
Probably the last person in the world he thought he'd see that day.
He was pretty shocked.
At the station, Eastman waived his rights and agreed to speak with Investigator Atwood and a colleague.
Ryan? Yep. Nice to meet you, Ryan. Just love your haircut.
Thank you.
Yeah, I had my autistic nephew do mine.
Eastman seemed timid, even gentle. And it soon became quite apparent this interview would be like no other.
Please, Sir Father.
Time to find out more about Kevin Eastman.
Kevin, breathe.
Where was Heather while all this was going on? Was she hiding? Had she fled? Oh, there would be an answer soon enough. Kevin Eastman wasn't acting like your average suspect. But he was adamant about one thing. He had nothing to do with the killing of Scott Sessions.
I've never even seen this dude. He has called Scott.
So Eastman agreed to talk to the detectives, who were then still looking for Eastman's suspected accomplice and ex-girlfriend, Heather Frank.
Where's Heather?
She's probably at work.
She's not at work.
She's not home. And her car's home.
We want to hear the truth from you.
The truth? The truth was, said Kevin Eastman, that Heather, the woman he dated on and off for years, was the love of his life.
I just asked her to marry me, you know what I mean? Again.
How many times have you asked her?
Three. That's it, yeah.
Heather's answer was always no. But they were together that Saturday night, and not just them, said the detectives. Scott was with them. Had to be. Since Scott's phone was pinging in the very same place.
The three of you were at Heather's house for an extended period of time. We know that as fact.
Yeah, we know that you were there.
And I don't remember anything.
So then they showed him the photos of his car going up to the mountains, to the same area where Scott's body was found.
Do you think all this is a coincidence?
I don't know what to think about any of that.
They wanted to show him the messages between Heather and Scott. Eastman covered his ears.
Oh, please.
No, it's not detailed. It's not detailed.
I don't want to hear any of it.
Kevin?
No, please.
After that, Kevin Eastman said he felt sick. During a break, he withdrew to a corner and prayed to God to help. The police.
Let me help these men get to the bottom of this case. Please keep Heather safe.
And then, in the middle of the interrogation, Atwood got a message about Heather.
It was like I got hit by a wrecking ball, that they had found Heather Frank's body.
Heather was dead. Her body hidden under some lumber on that farm. Two fatal bullet wounds in her chest.
We found her body wrapped in the same manner that Scott Sessions' body was found.
Wrapped in plastic, perhaps waiting to be thrown on the fire pit at the farm, to be burned like Scott was burned. And so they confronted Kevin Eastman.
All right, Kevin, Heather's dead. You know she's dead. Scott's dead.
Heather can't be dead.
You need to start talking to us.
But Kevin Eastman was a wall of denial.
Kevin, since you're under arrest.
They charged him with two counts of first-degree murder for killing both Scott and Heather.
To jail clothing. Okay, we're going to take some photographs of you.
Word slowly got out to Heather's friends, including Kimberly Shearer.
I didn't understand why she was with him, ever. From the day I met her, I didn't understand it.
Heather, the sad truth was, had been physically and emotionally abused by Kevin Eastman for years.
This is the first time he's done this to me.
It's not the first time?
Here, as recorded by police at a year before her death, was Heather in a hospital, taken there after she said Eastman punched her.
Punches to the left side of my ribs. And I had to get out of there because it was going to hurt me worse.
Kimberly said Heather told her about other incidents.
Kevin held a knife to her throat and threatened to kill her. And the really bad episodes would come when she would try to break up with him.
But she just couldn't shake him off, said her fellow waitress, Shelby Cabong, no matter how bad it got.
She really opened up to me about how he was treating her and what he had done to her.
What had he done to her?
He had beat her a handful of times.
Heather, almost everyone agreed, was a victim herself. Chief Deputy DA Steve Wren.
Have you had opportunities in the past to talk to victims of domestic violence to kind of untangle the difficult strands of what those relationships are like and to understand them?
I've had a lot of opportunities. And the common thread is they themselves find it hard to explain to somebody else their emotions and as a result, their actions.
So what happened that Saturday night? Police think Kevin Eastman simply wouldn't allow Heather to move on without him. So he came up with a plan to eliminate his competition.
Jealous rage? Is that what that was?
Jealous rage. That was my take.
Investigators believe Kevin Eastman and Heather were both at the house that night. But it was Kevin, not Heather, who sent those messages to Scott, inviting him over.
Here's a man who is luring somebody to his death.
Certainly looked that way.
Police found a large bloodstain on the carpet inside Heather's front door. They think Eastman hid behind that door, ambushed Scott, slashed his throat, and Scott never saw it coming.
Would Heather have known what Kevin was going to do to Scott?
I think that would have been a very good question to ask her if she was alive this day.
Some of Heather's last moments alive were captured on that surveillance video, walking to her death without knowing it, under the control of Kevin Eastman.
If she's not going to be with me, she's not going to be with anybody else. And also, I don't want her telling the cops what I did.
It seems that Heather was most likely killed during the hours the detectives were taking a rest.
If you look back on that and you think, damn, why did we just spend one more night at it?
But yeah, in hindsight, 2020.
Yeah.
We didn't make the decision to murder Heather Frank.
No.
That was a decision that Kevin Eastman made. But it sits with me day in and day out. There is not a day that goes by that I don't think about that decision. And what could we have done differently?
Please rise.
Kevin Eastman pleaded not guilty and went on trial in June 2022. His defense? That Heather actually killed Scott, and that the man who owned the farm killed Heather.
As it relates to count number one,
the jury would have none of it.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Kevin Dean Eastman, guilty of murder in the first degree after deliberation.
Guilty. Kevin Eastman was given two consecutive life sentences. He'll spend the rest of his life in prison. George George Gray's band put on a memorial concert at Greeley's Union Colony Civic Center for Scott and for Heather.
Amazing grace, oh how sweet the sound.
On the stage, Scott's trumpet. In the audience, his dad and sister.
Like me.
I just miss him.
2 months after Scott's death, Stan Sessions lost his wife, Linda. His last words to her were about their son.
I said to her, "Honey, it's okay. You lived a great life. You raised a good family. You can go now and go see our Scotty."
See? Woo!